When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
3, 2, 1.
But I've worked it out. I love to listen to your podcast.
Whenever you say something, other people react to it.
Taking my breath away, Aaron.
Vern Lundquist joins me. Hall of Famer Jim Calhoun, NASCAR icon Dale Earnhardt Jr. Kirk Herbstreit is on the phone.
Here we
go.
Ready for the podcast. It is Sweeping America, the Air Tour Sports Podcast. It is Wednesday night, April 28th, 2021. People, hope everybody is having a great week. Here is the deal. I just decided I'm not going to wait till Thursday morning. Thursday morning is the day of the NFL draft. So let's get out a show that is heavy on the NFL draft late Wednesday night, which is exactly what I'm doing today. Here is a quick rundown of today's show. First of all, it is the day before the NFL draft. Many of you won't listen until Thursday. So the day of the NFL draft, I am going to give you my 10 biggest storylines going into the draft, the things that are jumping out to me. From there, I will give you my favorite NFL draft props. After that, great interview, Eric Enholm, Yahoo Sports, who I believe is as good of an NFL draft writer as there is. This is a guy that literally all year long on the NFL draft, on Tuesday morning, he'll be breaking down tape of Spencer Rattler and all the 2022 prospects. So Eric Enholm, really fun interview with him. I will come back on the back end just very briefly to talk about this Mark Emmert contract extension. What is the NCAA doing? Makes no sense. I don't understand it. So that is on the back end of Eric Enholm. But first, I will give my 10 biggest storylines going into the NFL draft. I will follow it up with my favorite prop bets. And I should mention, we will have a special late Thursday, early Friday show. So today is the NFL draft preview. Friday or Thursday night really is when the show will go up. I will give you a recap of the NFL draft because I just feel like, hey, why wait till Monday to talk about the NFL draft? So Thursday night, you will get a third episode of the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast this week. But let's get into today's show, and let's start with, as I said, the 10 biggest storylines to me now about 24 hours from the start of the NFL draft, a little bit under 24 hours as I record here. Let me just say a few things. First of all, off the top, these are not the 10 biggest storylines, period, because everyone's kind of perception of what is going to happen is different, but to me, there are a few things that jump out, a few things that are very interesting to me. And I'll also say I'm not going to hit on necessarily the 10 biggest players or the 10 this or the 10 that, because I really don't think you need me to tell you that Trevor Lawrence is going number one overall to the Jaguars. I don't think there's anything all that compelling about that storyline. So I'm going to skip over Trevor Lawrence at number one, and I'm going to skip over some of the other storylines that probably feel big, but to me just aren't all that interesting. Look, Kyle Pitts is probably going to go number four to the Atlanta Falcons. Don't know how much there is to say other than that guy is awesome, and he deserves to go number four. So not necessarily the 10 biggest storylines or the 10 biggest players, but to me, the 10 most interesting stories going into the NFL draft, and here is number one. And I talked about it a few weeks ago, and that is this. I just don't get why Zach Wilson is the consensus number two pick. And by the way, to be clear, I did an NFL draft segment a few weeks ago. I promise it will not be a ton of overlap, but this is one that I still, 2 weeks ago, just don't get. And I finally give credit to other people in the media that are like, why are we so positive that Zach Wilson is going to go number two or should go number two? Now, to be clear, I'm not saying the Jets are pulling a fast one, but imagine if they were. Imagine if this whole time they were just like, yeah, you know, Zach Wilson, yeah, we're not even. And then they took Justin Fields or Mac Jones or whoever. But I just don't get why it is so definitive. If you want to have the argument that Zach Wilson should be number two, I can absolutely have that argument. He was awesome this year. You go back and look at his season, he was phenomenal in a year where obviously there was so much start, stop, this, that. This guy basically played from week one and was dominant all season long, completing 73.5% of his passes, 33 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Great season. But it's not as though he comes with zero warts and zero question marks that make him the unquestionable number two pick. The first one is, this was basically the only year where he played well, right? Like, we're criticizing Justin Fields because his numbers came down a little bit this year. Well, what's the difference between Zach Wilson's numbers going way up and Justin Fields' numbers going way down? One year he was good, one year he wasn't. Mac Jones, we're criticizing him because he only started for 1 year at Alabama. Zach Wilson was not good as a second-year player at BYU last year. So I mentioned in 2020, Zach Wilson completed 73% of his passes, 33 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. Great season, not taking away from him. But do you know what he did as a sophomore in 2019? 2,300 yards, 62% completion percentage, 11 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. Let me repeat that. 2019, 62% completion percentage, 11 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. Now, he was significantly better as a junior this past season, but it's also worth noting the schedule was significantly worse this year. Never forget, through no fault of Zach Wilson, BYU did not play a very challenging schedule because all the Power 5 schools canceled on them because of COVID. When BYU started their season, I mean, the Pac-12 and Big Ten weren't even going to play at all. But Zach Wilson did not face elite competition throughout his junior year when he put up his best numbers. When he played better teams as a sophomore, just going to put it out there, was kind of a mess, wasn't really the guy. And so the idea that he put up great numbers against a bad schedule, I would mention, by far the best defense he played this year was Coastal Carolina. That was the only loss that BYU took all year in a game where he looked pedestrian, completing 63% of his passes, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. I just don't get why this guy is so consensus at number two. And we can't even have the debate about anybody else. On top of the fact that he is going to the organization with maybe the least talent in the entire NFL, which is the New York Jets, on top of the fact that everything else, that he is going to New York, where obviously there is going to be a microscope as he replaces Sam Darnold. I just don't get it. I'm not saying it's inconceivable he gets picked at number two. I'm not saying we can't have the conversation about Zach Wilson. I just don't understand why it's so definitive. As a matter of fact, everybody is freaking out about how can you take Mac Jones number three, when I think the real question is, how can you take Zach Wilson at number two? Speaking of Mac Jones, this is the second most interesting thing about this NFL draft to me. Why is everyone freaking out that Mac Jones could go number three? I mean, again, I'm not saying that he has to, that it's definitive, but we're not even arguing about Zach Wilson, but we're going to debate about Mac Jones, who just put together one of these most statistically impressive seasons in college football history against one of the toughest schedules in college football history, and it's inconceivable that that guy could go number three? First of all, enough with the, how did he move up draft boards after the season ended? They didn't even play games. Well, dummy, the reason he moved up draft boards is pretty simple. The guys who are making decisions, the guys and girls in these front offices, guess what they were doing during the college football regular season? They were worrying about their own teams. You think Kyle Shanahan was sitting around on a Saturday afternoon watching Bama, Tennessee when he had to get ready for Russell Wilson the next day? No. So these teams all flipped on tape and they all flipped on tape after the season and said, oh my God, this guy is really good. And the numbers back up that, as I said, he had one of the most statistically impressive seasons in the history of college football. 77.4% completion percentage, 41 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. And by the way, if that 77.4% completion percentage sounds impressive, it's because it was the greatest, highest completion percentage in the history of college football. That's the other thing that cracks me up about this Mac Jones conversation. How could, anyone could do at Alabama what Mac Jones did? Well, literally no one had better stats than him in the history of college football. Not Tua, not Matt Leinart when he was at USC, not Joe Burrow last year. Literally no one has ever had a higher completion percentage than Mac Jones. So don't tell me that anyone could do what Mac Jones did, because no one in the history of college football did. So the idea that he's going to go number three, I don't get why it's this inconceivable, big, you know, unsolved mystery that we got to get on Netflix, right? Like, I mean, and here's the other thing I was thinking about. So last year, never forget, last year, Tua went number five. No big deal, right? No big deal that Tua went five. Well, I mean, how could Tua not go five? He's awesome. Well, here's the facts. Tua was coming off major hip surgery, which I think we forget now. But, oh, by the way, there was thought this time last year, like, is Tua even definitively going to be able to play next season? Coming off major hip surgery, he basically had the same touchdown-to-interception ratio as Mac Jones did this season. Basically, 11-to-1 touchdown-interception ratio. Same number of average yards per completion. And Mac Jones's completion percentage was way higher. I would add, Tua did it with more talent around him. Remember, Tua had Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy last year. And he did it against an easier schedule. Never forget, Mac Jones played an SEC-only 10-game schedule. Season ends. Goes to Atlanta for the SEC championship game, has to go up against Kyle Trask and Kyle Pitts for Florida, wins that game. Then he's got to go to the college football playoff and play Notre Dame and Ohio State. So this is who Mac Jones put up a 77.4% completion percentage against. 10 SEC teams, an 11th SEC team in the SEC championship game, Notre Dame and Ohio State. And it's inconceivable. So Tua, with worse stats against worse competition and better players off major hip surgery, he went top five. Totally cool. No problem. But Mac Jones can't go number three. Get out of here. I don't get it. Number three, Justin Fields. For the record, let the record show. If I was San Francisco, I would take Justin Fields because I do believe the upside is higher. I'm going to talk about it a little bit in the prop bets in a minute. But I believe the upside is higher. And if you don't believe Jimmy Garoppolo is your guy long term, you need somebody with insane upside, and Justin Fields is that guy. I'll take it a step further. I would actually take Justin Fields if I was the New York Jets. Don't understand the Zach Wilson love, but here is my prediction on Justin Fields. I believe he goes somewhere in the top 10. I've seen these crazy mock drafts where he just tumbles down the draft boards, and I don't see it. First of all, as I'll explain, I don't think he's going to go to San Francisco. I don't think it's like totally inconceivable, though. Doesn't it kind of feel like the 49ers are trying to throw up a smokescreen and let the world know they're interested in everybody but Justin Fields? So that's one. But two, I just think he's going in the top 10 because one of two things is going to happen. Either a team in the bottom half of the top 10 that sort of kind of has a quarterback but really doesn't is going to take him, like the Carolina Panthers at number 8, who have Sam Darnold, but they don't know if he's really the long-term answer. Like the Denver Broncos, who traded for Teddy Bridgewater on Wednesday, might be the answer, but don't know. Either somebody's going to say, we got to take a chance on Justin Fields, or I believe somebody will trade up in the back half of the first round, or back half of the top 10, because Miami has made it known that they'll trade the number 6 pick. The Detroit Lions will trade the 7th pick, maybe Carolina at number 8. I believe Justin Fields is going in the top 10. That's number 3. Number 4. I believe Trey Lance is going to be a big faller. As a matter of fact, I don't want to spoil my favorite prop bets, but that's one of them. 7.5, I believe, is the over-under. It's either 7.5 or 8.5. I forget. I'll get to it in a minute. I think he's going to tumble because I do think at the end of the day, you could talk about upside. You could talk about this. You could talk about that. And I'm not saying that he shouldn't go in the first round. I'm not saying that if you're the Patriots and you believe you got 1 year left with Cam Newton, that you can't take Trey Lance. If you're even the Panthers or the Broncos or whoever, if you think you got a year or two left with your guy or you're not totally positive on your guy, I have no problem. But I do think these top teams that know that they need a quarterback and need one to produce right away, I think it sounds great, right? You put on the tape, he's awesome, he's fast, he's athletic, he's a dual threat, he doesn't make mistakes, doesn't turn the ball over. But I do think when you step up to that podium on draft night and you know your career is on the line, like if Kyle Shanahan messes up this pick and the 49ers peaked in the Super Bowl a few years ago, I mean, he'll get another job, but he's done in San Francisco, right? And so I think when somebody steps up to that podium in the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th pick and says, Trey Lance, North Dakota State, I just don't think they're going to have the guts to do it because they know if they miss on him, career's over. So play it safe, take the offensive tackle, take the D lineman, take the wide receiver. I believe Trey Lance will be the 5th quarterback off the board behind Justin Fields, Mac Jones, Zach Wilson, and Trevor Lawrence. Number 5, and I'll try to speed these up because I'm going long like AT loves to do. Number 5, the Bengals at number 5 are the most interesting team in the draft to me because they have the age. First of all, they're the Bengals, and they're going to screw it up some way somehow. But they have the age-old question that none of us has the answer to. Do you make your quarterback happy or do what is actually best, right? Like it's like, you know, having a kid, I guess. I don't know. I don't have kids. Kid wants ice cream for dinner. You can't just give them ice cream for dinner. And that's kind of what's going on with the Bengals at number 5. Joe Burrow wants Ja'Marr Chase, who, of course, was his top wide receiver at LSU during that historic championship run. I get it. I want ice cream for dinner. I would want Ja'Marr Chase if I was Joe Burrow. Here's the problem. They need somebody to protect him. Did you see Joe Burrow last year? He was getting killed in the pocket. I'm not even kidding. I'm worried about his health. And so to me, you have to take Penei Sewell from Oregon. But I don't know if they will because I think they want to make Joe Burrow so happy. And it's great to have a flashy wide receiver. But if Joe Burrow is getting killed in the pocket before he can even throw the ball, before Ja'Marr Chase can get open, what does it matter? So to me, number 5 is the most interesting pick in the draft to me, even more interesting than number 3 at San Francisco. Number 6 in terms of the most interesting storylines in this draft. I believe Elijah Moore, wide receiver, Ole Miss, is the steal of the draft. And I'm going to get into Elijah Moore a little bit later with the over-unders and the prop bets. But let me just tell you this. I watch a ton of college football. Obviously, y'all do. Ole Miss was one of the most fun teams to watch. And Elijah Moore, every play, you knew he was getting the ball. And every play, he still figured out a way to get open. Every play, he figured out a way to make the catch, break off, score touchdowns. This was a guy in just a handful of games played because he opted out of the final, I think, 3 games of the season. So he played 2, 4, 6. He played in 8 games, 86 catches, 1,200 yards, 8 touchdowns, 14 yards per catch. Maybe Lane Kiffin is that good of a play caller, and he is, but he always found a way to get Elijah Moore the ball, and he was unbelievable. So Elijah Moore, to me, from Ole Miss, wide receiver, steal of the draft. I've seen him a lot to the Tennessee Titans. Tennessee Titans fans, good luck, man. First of all, you already have A.J. Brown, former Ole Miss wide receiver. This guy is special as well. Number 8, I believe Najee Harris, another guy who will be a steal, and I believe he's a first-rounder. This is, you know, we talk about running back, the running back position dying. It's not dying. You need running backs, and Najee Harris is as complete of a running back as I can remember in a long time. This is a guy that can run the ball between the tackles, goes without saying, probably not surprising if you watched Alabama, was awesome, 1,400 yards this year, 26 touchdowns, but he also is a great blocker and a great receiver out of the backfield at 43. I believe Najee Harris will go to the Pittsburgh Steelers in the mid-20s, but this guy's a first rounder. Another prop bet, not to steal the thunder from the next segment, but Najee Harris, over under a half a running back taken. In other words, am I going to bet that one running back or more gets taken? I believe at least one running back will. And so because of it, Najee Harris is the steal of the draft. Speaking of which, I mentioned Najee Harris. How about this at number 9? This is crazy, and I'm not going to lie to you. Not going to lie to you. And nobody else is talking about this, and it might be a topic come Friday. But you heard it here first on the Aaron Torres podcast. By the end of the first round, are we going to be talking about the Alabama 2017 recruiting class as the greatest recruiting class in the history of college football? Let me lay it out for you. The 2017 recruiting class is the kids who recently completed their senior seasons. Of course, there were players from that class who were eligible for last year's draft. 2017 recruiting class had 4 different players drafted last year in the first round. Tua went number 5. Henry Ruggs went number 12. Jerry Jeudy went in the mid-teens. And Jedrick Wills went in the top 10 as well. So they had 4 players basically in like the top 20 last year on top of Xavier McKinney, who was an early second-round pick, I believe, of the Minnesota Vikings. This year, they could have 4 more first-rounders from the same recruiting class in 2017. Najee Harris, who I just mentioned. Mac Jones was in that recruiting class. Devontae Smith, not sure if you heard of him, Heisman Trophy winner. He's going to go in the first round. Alex Leatherwood, the offensive tackle, likely a first rounder. So we are talking about 4 first rounders in last year's draft, plus one of the early picks of the second round, 4 first rounders in this year's draft, and there's still a few guys that are still in college that could get drafted really high next season, including Brian Robinson, a top running back, on top of him, beyond him, Christopher Allen, a linebacker. And there's also guys in this draft that will go very high in the second round, like a Dylan Moses. So four first-rounders last year, likely four first-rounders this year. Is this the greatest recruiting class ever? Oh, by the way, they won two national championships while they were on campus in the 2017 season when they beat Georgia. The seniors that stuck around won a title last year. How about Bama with maybe the greatest recruiting class of all time? Finally, my final thought going into this draft. How great is it going to be to just have a pseudo-normal draft? And let me say this. Everybody likes to crush Roger Goodell for everything, and I get it. I understand why Roger Goodell gets crushed. He's not a very cool, like, it's easy to make fun of Roger Goodell, right? There are guys that are easy targets. He's one of them. First of all, I thought the draft went off without a hitch last year. I thought it was better than I could have ever anticipated. You think about all the cameras, all of this, all of that. Cameras on the coaches, cameras on the players, cameras on the players' family, cameras at Roger Goodell's house, cameras at the facility. All the things that had to go right. And really, technologically, it was flawless. So credit to Roger Goodell. But how great is it going to be? They say they're going to have 50,000 fans in Cleveland this week, which I believe will be the biggest gathering of sports fans ever since the COVID thing started. The previous record was 43,000 at Alabama spring game. 50,000 fans in Cleveland. Roger Goodell, people, I don't talk about vaccinations on this show. Don't try to get political. But they say he's vaccinated. They say he can dap and hug. And if he wants to kiss somebody on the lips, he can kiss him on the lips, whatever he wants. I am so happy to see Roger Goodell. So those are my 10 things that I am most looking forward to, the most interesting things about this draft. One, why are we so sold on Zach Wilson? Two, let's stop acting like it's crazy that Mac Jones might go number three. Three, Justin Fields goes in the top 10. Four, Trey Lance is the fifth quarterback taken. Five, Joe Burrow. Do they give him what he wants or do they give him what he needs? Wide receiver or offensive tackle? Six, Elijah Moore is a stud. Seven, Najee Harris. Eight, Bama recruiting class. 9 and 10, in-person Roger Goodell. I'm not going to lie, I skipped one, but I'm not going to do that whole segment over. I was also going to talk about opt-outs. I find it interesting, outside of Jamar Chase, it feels like just about everybody else that opted out could fall. Penei Sewell, if he does not go to the Cincinnati Bengals at five, he could fall. Greg Rousseau is falling from Miami. Micah Parsons might be falling as well. So that is an interesting topic as well. But those are my top 10 things. And man, oh man, is it going to be awesome to see Roger Goodell on my TV screen on Thursday night. All right, everybody, one last NFL draft topic before we get to Eric Edholm, the Yahoo Senior Sports NFL draft writer. Eric is really, honestly, I believe, one of the best NFL draft writers out there. I love talking to him. And he's one of these guys. Like, he does NFL draft stuff 365 days a year. He doesn't swing in at the last minute like your boy here, Torres, tries to claim like he knows everything. I mean, Eric Edholm is awesome. I think you'll really enjoy the conversation. And I really look forward to speaking with him. And I think you guys will enjoy it. But before we get to Eric Edholm, one last thing. And that is NFL draft props. And for a little bit of background, I'm sure all you guys know this. But really, over the last 2, 3, 4 years, draft props have become a huge part of coverage of the NFL draft, of watching the NFL draft, of all that stuff. If you remember last year, it really kind of blew up because of COVID and the pandemic. If you remember, there were obviously basically no live sports once the NCAA tournament was canceled in mid-March. Everybody was looking to bet on something. First thing that happens is the NFL draft in late April, and people loved it. People went crazy. People betted a ton. And with the fact that so many more of you now can legally sports gamble, many of you asked me to do a segment on NFL draft props going into the NFL draft, and I have done it here. I am a man of the people. I will give you what I want, give you what you want. So let's get into my favorite draft props going into Thursday night. And I should mention, by the way, it is worth mentioning that I was reading an article, actually, that apparently Vegas got crushed on draft props about 2, 3, 4 years ago. And so because of it, I don't think there's any great, great, great lines out there, but I still did manage to find I think 6 or 7 props that I really like. So let's get into it. The first prop I actually don't think will hit, but I don't think it's conceivable, and I like the odds, so I'm going to take it, and that is the number 3 pick. You can get Justin Fields at 5-1 plus 500, which means if you bet 10 and Justin Fields goes number 3 overall, you win 50, on and on and on. So you bet 100, you win 500, whatever. Justin Fields, number 3 overall, plus 500. Here's the reason why. If you've been following this stuff, and I know you guys have been, if you're listening to this segment, I know you have been, doesn't it feel like San Francisco is going out of their way to let the world know that they're interested in basically everyone other than Justin Fields. And I know I talked about it earlier, but you know, this trade happens and we all kind of have the same thought. Jimmy Garoppolo is clearly not the long-term answer. They want somebody with higher upside. Jimmy Garoppolo can get the San Francisco 49ers to a Super Bowl, but he can't win once he gets there, and so they need an upgraded quarterback. Maybe you believe Mac Jones is the quarterback. I don't believe that Trey Lance will be the pick here. Let me explain why. If you believe that Jimmy Garoppolo isn't the answer, and you need a quarterback that can get you there in this small window where you have a lot of young players on your defense making no money at all, you got to get a quarterback that can produce and contribute starting next season, and I don't know that Trey Lance is that guy. This guy might not have to start week one if you keep Jimmy Garoppolo, but by week five, week six, week seven, this guy has to be good to go. Think of it almost the way that the Dolphins treated Tua last year. He didn't start week one, but by week four, week five, week six, they had to figure out, is he our guy? Can we rely on him? And they threw him in the starting lineup. And so when you think about this San Francisco 49ers pick, sure, Mac Jones could be the guy, but I don't believe Trey Lance could be that guy for that reason. Do they really believe that he can step in after playing at the FCS level, a level down, and not playing at all this season, that by week four, week five, week six, he's going to be ready to go against Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson and Matthew Stafford in the NFC West? I don't see it. And so because of it, I do think the pick is Mac Jones. I don't think it's inconceivable that it's Justin Fields, though. We know what his upside is, and like I said, it feels an awful lot like the it feels an awful lot like basically the San Francisco 49ers are basically doing anything they can to let the world know that they're not interested in Justin Fields. I don't think it can happen, but at the odds that are available, and most of these picks are, by the way, via FanDuel, I do like Justin Fields plus 500. Second pick, over under Trey Lance getting drafted at 7.5. Okay, so the over-under is 7.5. So what that means is he going to go over 7.5 or under 7.5? So is he going to go after the 8th pick or before the 7th pick? And I have the over of 7.5. Why over 7.5? It's for a few reasons. First of all, if you look at the draft board, there really aren't that many spots that Trey Lance can go. You know, number one is going to be Trevor Lawrence. You know, number two to the Jets is going to be Zach Wilson. You know, number four, if the Atlanta Falcons keep the pick, are not going to take him. They're not going to take a backup for Matt Ryan when the new kind of coaching staff in Atlanta wants to win now. They're probably going to take Kyle Pitts at four. You know, he's not going to go five to Cincinnati because Joe Burrow's either going to get an offensive tackle in Penei Sewell or Penei Sewell. I pronounced the wrong, or Jamar Chase. So you know he's not going one, two, four, five or six to Miami. I don't believe he's going seven to the Detroit Lions because of the fact that they obviously just traded for a quarterback in Jared Goff. They owe him a ton of money. They can't get out from under that contract, and they got a million needs. And so basically, if you believe that Trey Lance is going in the top eight, what you believe is San Francisco is going to take him at number three, which I just made the argument I don't believe, or somebody is going to trade up to get him. Well, although that's certainly possible, but think about a couple things. First of all, you could trade up to get the other quarterback that fell, which will probably be Justin Fields, and not take Trey Lance. On top of that, some of these teams that might have been interested have solved or at least kind of sort of internally handled their quarterback situation. Carolina trades for Sam Darnold. Denver trades for Teddy Bridgewater. I don't believe that either of those guys is the long-term answer. But after you just traded for guys, are you then going to trade up into the top seven to get another quarterback? I don't see it. So to me, I believe Trey Lance is a guy that falls. I'm not saying he's going in the second round. I just believe inside the top eight does not feel right to me. So I like over 7.5. Because of it, I do like that bet. It's plus 174. All right, over under number of running backs taken, it's 0.5, which basically means, are you betting there's going to be over one or zero and the under? I will take the over of 0.5, which basically means I believe at least one running back will be taken. The odds are minus 450, which I don't love, not excited about that number. But I think when you look at the board, just think about it. First of all, there's a couple teams that do need a running back, most notably Pittsburgh in the mid-20s. Everyone's kind of has them pegged for Najee Harris. But on top of the fact that there's a couple teams that need it, there are two really good running backs on the board. Najee Harris from Alabama, Travis Etienne from Clemson, two complete running backs. They can catch the ball, they can block, they can obviously run between the tackles. And so I believe that, one, Najee Harris is probably going to go somewhere in the early 20s to Pittsburgh. But also, it's not inconceivable to me that somebody could trade up into the back end of the first round to get a guy. Also, there's a few teams that need running backs, that need playmakers late in the first round that have a second pick that could consider taking a running back. The Jacksonville Jaguars with Urban Meyer, the Miami Dolphins have a second pick. And so I believe somebody is going to take a running back at some point. I like that bet of over 0.5 running backs taken in the first round. I also like the over of 4.5 wide receivers taken in the first round, minus 350. And the reason is pretty simple, okay? The reason that I like the over there with the wide receivers of 4.5 is, again, simple. First of all, three guys are going off the board right off the top. Ja'Marr Chase from LSU, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith from Alabama. They are not falling past the first half of the first round. So at that point, basically in the back half of the first round, all you need is two wide receivers to come off the board. Well, Elijah Moore from Ole Miss is in all mock drafts basically in the early 20s. Rashad Bateman is getting some first-round love from Minnesota. Kadarius Toney is getting some first-round love from Florida. And I just think when you look at the way the NFL is going, everybody needs playmakers on the outside. Maybe you don't take a wide receiver in the top 10, but if your offense stinks, you need guys that can stretch the field and make plays, because everybody now has to be able to score points if you want to keep up with the Kansas City Chiefs and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and teams like that. But then also, even the teams that do score points, you got to keep your quarterback happy. Lamar Jackson, you got to keep getting that guy weapons because, he doesn't have enough help around him outside of Hollywood Brown at wide receiver. How about the fact that, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers? I mean, you can go on and on down the list. Even the teams that have quarterbacks, even the teams that have playmakers, you can never have enough. So I believe 4.5 wide receivers will be taken. I like the over of minus 350 of 4.5 wide receivers taken. Really quickly off the board, by the way, I should mention, I will reference all of these picks at the end. I'll also put up a little graphic on Instagram and Twitter so you can follow my picks. Over under Caleb Farley, the cornerback from Virginia Tech, over under 26.5. Basically, will he be picked before the 26th pick or after the 26th pick? I believe it's over and that he will be picked later. Listen, I feel bad for this kid. Through no fault of his own, he is stumbling down draft boards, okay? And when I say no fault of his own, it's not really his fault. He was one of the first players to opt out last year, and in his case, I do not blame him. It's a little bit of a crazy backstory. It's actually a very sad backstory, but a few years ago, Caleb Farley's mother passed away from cancer, and when all this COVID stuff started, I think he was genuinely afraid about the idea of playing football this year because he was sitting there saying, I don't know if my mom's going to be safe, so I'm going to sit out, or excuse me, my mom has already passed away. I don't know if my dad is going to be safe. So he decides to sit out, and then on top of that, he then needed back surgery during the time that he wasn't playing football. So the kid hasn't played football in over a year. He just needed back surgery. And remember, because of COVID, teams could not get these players in their facilities to test them. So because of it, it makes it really hard to get accurate medical information on him, on and on and on. And so because of it, I believe that he is going to fall down draft boards. I like Caleb Farley of over 26.5, meaning I believe that he will be picked 27th or beyond. Couple other ones. Our old buddy Kellen Mond from Texas A&M. Over under 75.5. In other words, will he be picked before the 75th pick or after the 75th pick? I'm taking over, baby. Here's the deal. Every year in the draft, there's a quarterback that, like, with the last week or two, there starts to become this buzz of, like, oh, you know, this guy's moving up draft boards. Remember the year that Bryce Petty from Baylor was like, oh, he might go in the first round? He went, like, third or fourth round. Who else was it? Ryan Nassib, that's who it was, from Syracuse. Nobody had ever heard of him. Nobody saw him play. Syracuse stunk. Oh, he's moving up draft boards. The guy basically went undrafted. He went like fifth, sixth round. And so I bring it up because Kellen Mond has that kind of vibe to him. Listen, he was fine at Texas A&M, was very good in his senior year under Jimbo Fisher. But 75.5, give me a break. Five quarterbacks will be off the board at that point. You have to believe Kyle Trask, who I'll talk about in a minute, is off the board. Davis Mills from Stanford is off the board. And so 75.5, you're talking about an early third round pick. I just don't see it from Kellen Mond. No disrespect, but I am taking the over of minus 140. And then finally, this one's not available on FanDuel. I went to DraftKings for this one. Over under 72.5 for Kyle Pitts, I actually believe he'll be under, as in I believe he will be taken before the 72nd pick. And here's why. Somebody's going to need a quarterback after those five guys go off the board. Think about all the teams, if they do not take a quarterback in round one, would seriously consider taking one in the second, third, fourth round. The Washington football team is going to need a quarterback. Ryan Fitzpatrick is not the long-term answer there. I don't think Taylor Heineke is. The New England Patriots, if they don't draft a quarterback, they're going to take one in the second, third, fourth round like they did with Jimmy Garoppolo a few years ago. The Pittsburgh Steelers may need a quarterback. The New Orleans Saints may need a quarterback if they don't believe Taysom Hill or Jameis Winston. And if you go in the second or third round, you're not really committing to a guy long-term. You're just giving yourself options later in the draft. And so when I look at Kyle Trask at 72.5, this is a guy that some people believed was going to be a first-round pick. That 72.5, you're now talking about the middle of the third round, I believe he will go under. So those are my best bets. Do with them as you please. I'll read them off again, and then I'll get them done in a graphic for you. Justin Fields, number 3 overall, plus 500. I don't think he'll go there, but I don't think it's inconceivable. Trey Lance, I believe he will go over the 7.5 pick, pick number 7.5, plus 174. I like the over there. Over 0.5 running backs taken, minus 450. Over 4.5 wide receivers taken, minus 350. Over for Caleb Farley at 26.5. I believe he will be drafted after the 26th pick. Over for Kellen Mond, I believe he will go after the 75th pick, so 75.5. And then under for Kyle Trask at 72.5. I hope that made sense, by the way. Hope that made sense. A lot of numbers I threw at you, but hope it made sense. Those are my 6 favorite prop bets. 7 by technicality. Who cares? All right, let's get out of here. Let's get to Eric Edholm. Really fun segment with Eric Edholm. So Eric Edholm, NFL draft writer. He, of course, works for Yahoo. And really, I believe, one of the best NFL draft writers going. Before we get to Eric Edholm, also, I should mention on the back end, Mark Emmert. We'll talk a little bit about Mark Emmert as he gets a contract extension. I think it is absolutely insanity. I will save the Torrent Craig and all that stuff for after the Eric Edholm interview when I talk Mark Emmert. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get to NFL Draft Insider Eric Edholm. Really fun conversation.
All right, joining me via Zoom, NFL Draft now just hours away. And he is, in my opinion, if not the best, one of the best draft resources anywhere, entire internet, TV, whatever. Eric Edholm, Yahoo Sports writer there, covers the NFL and the NFL draft incredibly well. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. My man, how you holding up? You okay?
Well, first of all, you've got that that intro down pat, man. You are too kind, and I appreciate the nice words. I'm hanging in there, man. It's been a long season. I was able to get a little breather in late March, so that helped. And I'm ready to go. I'm ready to hear some of these picks.
Well, fantastic. Well, let's jump into it because, listen, I honestly do love your coverage, man. And, you know, I've followed your work for years and just, you know, you're a dude. Obviously, there's guys like me that watch college football and love college football. I mean, you're breaking down tape of guys 2-3 years out. First of all, what are these last couple of days like? I mean, obviously, I know that the hay is in the barn, so to speak. But I mean, you're still also trying to get your readers and your followers the most accurate information possible. So how do you follow? How do you spend the last day, 2-3 in the lead up to the draft Thursday night?
Yeah, I mean, other than fending off my editors when they're looking for my stories. I'm still trying to make some calls. I've got a couple last minute stories I'm putting together here and, try to get some information. It's tough. I mean, everyone calls it lying season. I think that's yes, somewhat true, obviously. But, you can still find out, hey, where's the trade activity at? You know, what teams are willing to move up, down, what have you? And I think this year in particular, you're going to see maybe a little bit more of an emphasis when these trades do happen on possibly 2022 picks. I think there's a sense of, this draft has some appeal to it. There's no doubt about it. There's some things that are very good about this draft, but I think there's also a sense that if you're not dying for a quarterback in the next year, those 2022 picks can end up being pretty valuable. And I think with a lot of kids coming back to school, as you know, you're going to see the value of those picks continue to climb, kind of like one of those cryptocurrencies or something. Now, it may dip at some point, but for right now, it looks a little stronger than maybe this year's does.
So what you're essentially saying there, Eric, is basically that the teams that need a quarterback, like, say, San Francisco 2-3-4 weeks ago, are willing to basically mortgage the future for the present. And while, you know, the quarterback prospects maybe aren't there next year, like a Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, whoever, the depth is still really good. And so just basically the teams that don't need the quarterback are trying to just take advantage of kind of a hot quarterback market, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way to sort of set it up there. And I mean, yeah, even, you know, even the San Francisco trade, I mean, it's funny because in a, I don't know if this was their intention or not. They've sort of been known as a team that when they see what they want, they go after it. Price is not an issue, that sort of thing, whether it's a free agent, whether it's a big draft move or something like that. So, you know, they target their guy. They're not too worried about how the market looks. And inadvertently, I assume their price tag that they paid, their luxury tax, if you will, to go up and move from 12 to 3, has actually kind of spooked some of the teams who are interested in moving up, right? I mean, the Chicago Bears are sitting there at 20 thinking, what can we possibly give up that's reasonable, that isn't going to completely wreck our franchise to land one of these top five quarterbacks? You know, I think it scared off, you know, a gun-shy team anyway, like the New England Patriots at 15, who are saying, you know, we're already normally reticent to do this. Now, given what San Francisco paid, you know, ain't no way we're going to go that deep. So, you know, and that may apply to other teams as well. This is me speculating a little, but certainly what I've heard from other clubs who say, wow, San Francisco paid a premium. But you're right about 2022. I mean, this is not a strong defensive class this year at the top. There isn't a clear-cut, no questions asked, you know, spotless top 10 defensive prospect. Maybe Micah Parsons or Patrick Surtain get in there, but it's a stronger defensive class. And I think you're going to see relatively similar depth. You never really know, but there's some excitement about you know, kind of the depth at other positions next year.
Fantastic. By the way, you mentioned something a minute ago. You know, you said you called it lying season, and that was something I was thinking about as I was kind of prepping to talk to you. How do you know what to trust and what not to trust this time of year? Because, you know, everyone is you know, it seems as though trying to get misinformation out there more than accurate information.
Right. And obviously with no combine, kind of, you know, limited attendance at the Senior Bowl, you know, no in-person visits, it's been harder to come by that information this year more than ever. So, you know, I think that is kind of the backdrop. But when it comes to, you know, reliable sources and all that stuff, I mean, it is tricky. But I think if you trust your information gathering process as a journalist, you know, you look back at who's given you reliable information in the past and who hasn't. You know, if I'm asking quarterback questions, sometimes I'm asking teams that don't need the quarterback. They're more likely to be, you know, to give a candor as opposed to some team that is looking for one. So, or possibly looking to trade down from wherever they are with a quarterback in mind. So, yeah, I mean, it's never perfect. It's always going to be a flawed system, but you know, you do have to trust those relationships you've built up over time and assume that those people are being on the level with you.
Very good. Let's get into some of kind of the narratives and storylines of this draft. And look, you know, it's a pretty popular kind of conversation and topic, and we kind of just touched on it, that it feels like the draft probably starts at number 3, obviously Trevor Lawrence 1 to Jacksonville, Zach Wilson 2 to the Jets. But this is my question. Why is everyone so definitive that Zach Wilson, not so much that the Jets are going to take him, are you sold he's the second best quarterback in the draft? And I'll just give you a little bit of background, and I've said it on this show before, but, you know, I host Fox Sports Radio every Saturday night. I think you know that. You've been on with me a ton, Eric. And, you know, there was no Pac-12 football, okay, until the middle of November this year. And so the only thing that was on when we were on was BYU football. And we loved watching Zach Wilson. He was a dynamic, fun player to watch. But I never sat there and watched him and said, that is definitively the second best player in this draft behind Trevor Lawrence. So, you know, whether the Jets take him or not, are you sold that, like, not even will he, could he, but is it even the right move that they don't appear to be considering anyone else other than Zach Wilson?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you brought up a great point. I remember having a conversation with an area scout who's based on the West Coast, and you know, he said the same thing. He said, I'm just sitting home watching tape, making calls and going to BYU games. That's literally, you know, that was his whole, you know, summer slash fall there when the Pac-12 was still sort of sitting around and planning things. So, yeah, it really is interesting. He did get a lot of exposure. You know, he did get that spotlight that maybe he wouldn't have. However, with the pandemic, he also lost out on a Utah game, a Missouri game, a few others against, you know, Power Five competition. And so Coastal Carolina ended up being his best competition. They lost that game. It was one of his weaker tapes. And you're right, I've got him as my QB4. Now, granted, wow. I have, you know, 2, 3, and 4 pretty close together. I have Fields, Trey Lance, and Wilson all, you know, kind of sort of lumped together. But I'm with you. There's some stuff in his tape that, look, he makes a brilliant, brilliant throw or a play on the move. You know, he's got better wheels than I think people realize. He's got the arm talent to put the entire field in play. But he makes some very questionable decisions for a guy who only threw, what, 3 picks last year. You know, there was some breath-holding moments there where you said mm-hmm. to yourself, oh, no, oh, that ain't going to work at the next level. So, you know, he's raw. I mean, not raw necessarily because he's had 3 years worth of starts, but I would say fundamentally speaking, he makes things a little more difficult than they need to be. That's really what it comes down to. And for every Mahomes or Rodgers moment that you see in his game, there's also some real questionable stuff. So that said, if he does go to the Jets, you know, play action, bootleg, outside the pocket, like that's the offense I think Mike LaFleur is bringing from San Francisco, you know, from the Kyle Shanahan tree. So I could see where it would work. Then again, he doesn't have BYU's offensive line, meaning, you know, he was given a huge pocket at times. And I don't know that protection is going to be quite the same on the NFL level. He also puts his receivers in harm's way sometimes with some hospital balls. So the whole thing is a little bit scary, I would say.
Very interesting. Do you, you know, it's probably kind of a cliche, dumb question. Does it concern you at all or the people that you talk to, frankly, you know, kind of a smaller school? I know BYU is a big brand, but as we said, they didn't play a ton of marquee teams this year. Going to New York, you know, thrown into that fire where, you know, I don't know NFL rosters as good as you, but the talent in New York, you know, I mean, it's not like going to San Francisco. Obviously, even Denver has had some, you know, marginal success. The talent base in New York is not great, and I know they have a million draft picks, but what about the idea of a quote-unquote sort of small town kid, small school kid going to New York? I know it's cliche, New York media, all that stuff, but is that a concern to you or the people you're talking to?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to take it into consideration, right? I mean, who are the, you know, I know they signed Corey Davis, they have Denzel Mims, you know, there is some young receiving talent there. I think they'll probably draft at least one more. They may draft a running back. So, you know, offensive line has to be on the list. So that, you know, they're going to add talent, but I think the question about the surrounding cast is fair. The one about the big city, I don't know the answer to that. I mean, this is a kid with a big personality. I think he likes the spotlight. Hmm. You know, some people who have been described that way in years past have gone to places, you know, cauldrons like New York and failed. Now, did they fail for the mental reasons? Did they fail for the, you know, for immaturity concerns? Did they fail for, you know, great expectations that were never going to be met? All of those could be true. None of them could be true. So it's a case by case basis. But I think this is a young man who enjoys being out there in the spotlight. I mean, there's an art to what he does, even if it's a little bit crazy at times. So, you know, will that translate for a team that, you know, for generations now has struggled to find the guy at quarterback? You know, that's the biggest question. This is obviously a crucial decision. And you're right. It's funny that we're kind of just glossing over that the draft starts at 3. Can we talk about Zach Wilson and whether he'll succeed in New York?
Thank you. I thought I was going crazy here because, yeah. You know, like, no, and you know, I get it, right? We're doing a million things, we're running around, and, you know, we have a lot of great hosts on Fox Sports Radio and these other networks and all that stuff where you just, when you hear, everyone just say like, oh yeah, no, it's Zach Wilson going to go too. And then you start to peel back the layers, and it's not to say he's not talented. He didn't have an incredible year, but I don't know. It blew my mind. And so I'm glad you're at least on the same page of,
yep.
By the way, do you think there's any chance that the Jets are just pulling a total, what do they say? Wool over our eyes or sheet over our eyes or whatever. And that they're going to, not take Zach Wilson at number two. You think that's at all a possibility?
Yeah, we need to have the draft in New York for something like that to happen. It can't be in Cleveland, right? We sure. need those Jets fans with the helmets and the gear and all that. But yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Those are the people we need to have in person. Maybe they make the trek. I don't know. I don't think so, but a couple of weeks ago, I did at least pose that question a little bit. And, the sense was that Wilson was going to be the pick. I guess that's one reason why perhaps – the 49ers haven't sort of let it leak out who they're taking because, they're not in threat of being jumped, right? So there's no real reason for a smokescreen other than the fact that they may not 100% know what direction the Jets are going. Then again, new coach Robert Saleh, comes from San Francisco. They helped him get the job. They were big advocates of his. I would imagine on some level they have a pretty good idea what Robert and the Jets are going to do. Maybe I'm being naive about that, but yeah, I mean, I would put the chances of pretty slim to none that Wilson isn't the guy.
All right. So then kind of on the reverse, we talked about Zach Wilson's kind of rise over the last 8-9 months. Why has Justin Fields fallen? Because, what I would just say really quick, and then I'll toss it back over to you. I'll just say, yes, some of the numbers were down, interceptions were up. One, his completion percentage was higher. But two, there were real reasons why this guy would have struggled. Most notably, Ryan Day wasn't there for a game. He played behind a backup offensive line for one game because of COVID. His receivers, there were like legitimate reasons. So outside, it can't be the epilepsy because that didn't come out until last week, or maybe that is part of it. But why do you believe that there is so many questions about Justin Fields, considering that he was the consensus number two guy coming into the season?
Yeah, I think, there are cases where there is a disconnect between NFL thinking and NFL, draft media going out there. Because obviously Fields came off the brilliant season 43 or 41 touchdowns and 3 interceptions in 2019. He went the whole year, basically had one pick until the playoff game. Coming into the season, there was a ton of excitement. If he did that in his first year of starting, after he was known as this run first quarterback, wow, the expectations were pretty wild for this year. And then he did have the Northwestern game. He did have the Indiana game, even the Michigan State game. He ran great, but I didn't see a tremendous passer in that performance. So some of it is obviously based on what he's done on the field. But you're right, there were extenuating circumstances there. Anyone who flips on the Clemson game knows how special he could be. That's why he's my quarterback too, is you see those high-end performances, you expect the circumstances to be a little more settled around him wherever he lands. So is he falling, or is he just not preferred by some of the teams picking up top? I think the truth probably lies a little bit somewhere in the middle. And I think there was this sense that he had to be the number two quarterback by people who are, kind of the armchair scouts and stuff. And I'm not saying that there wasn't some truth to that, but I also believe that there was a disconnect between what the clubs were actually thinking about him.
Assuming Zach Wilson goes number two, and for people listening, we're recording here about midday Monday. It won't run for another day or so, and this is always subject to change. But assuming Zach Wilson goes number two, who do you believe the 49ers will ultimately select at number three?
So when this trade first happened, within an hour of it occurring, my boss and I were talking. He said, what do you want to write about? I said, how about I just rank the three quarterbacks that I think are going to be there in terms of their likelihood of going to the Niners? He said, great, let's do it. My initial order was Lance 1, Jones 2, Fields 3, based on things that I'd gathered up to that point, what I knew about what Kyle Shanahan wanted, et cetera, et cetera. But, obviously as time went on, you got this big wave of Jones reports from, the heaviest of hitters in the NFL media saying Jones is the guy. Then there was this back, walk a little bit where people were saying, Ooh, maybe it's Fields. You know, they went to his pro day. There was a little bit of a bump there. Maybe it's Lance. I truly don't know. And I don't think there are many people who know outside of the organization. I still think it's Jones, just based on the firmness of those initial reports and some things that I've heard from other teams that say our thinking is it's Mac Jones at three. Now, some of that may have changed over the last week or two, but I would not be stunned by Trey Lance because, again, the reasoning of paying that high a price to move up was that you get the kid with maybe the highest upside, the unpolished gem who over time can be molded into a star. That was my thinking. It wouldn't shock me. I would probably put it at about 65-35 Jones. So maybe Lance is the guy. I don't really know.
Do you buy the narrative? Like, I guess you don't. Two quick questions. I want to get you out of here because I know you're a very, very busy man. One, Mac Jones. I'll just say really quick, you know, I get the narrative. There's so much talent around him. I would flip it by saying anybody that says, oh, anyone could do what he did. Well, he literally set an NCAA completion percentage record. It has never been done. Like, if anyone could do it, somebody would have done it by now. So it sounds like, you know, he's probably not, you know, I think you said you had him at number three or number four, whatever. Maybe number five, actually, I think you said.
Yeah.
But, you know, if Mac Jones goes number three, or even if he goes top five, is it just the most inconceivable, worst thing in your opinion, or do you kind of get it?
No, I wouldn't say it's the most inconceivable thing. It's not what I would do necessarily. But look, I think if there's a spot where he can thrive, it would be in San Francisco. Sure. I mean, a place where you have Kyle Shanahan designing an offense around your strengths, where you have an offensive line that's seen a lot of investment. You know, Trent Williams, they've kind of revived Laken Tomlinson. They signed Alex Mack. Mike McGlinchey was a first-round pick, so on and so forth. You have a great tight end in George Kittle. You have a kind of a two- or three-headed run game, a versatile piece with Kyle Juszczyk, you know, the deep guy with Brandon Ayuk, Debo Samuel. A lot of yards after the catch receivers, who I think could help him out a lot. So it really would be the perfect place. So it's not just a matter of, well, I have Mac Jones as my, you know, number 25 overall prospect, and he's my QB5. Ergo, if he goes number three, I'm going to give it a bad grade. No, you have to think about the fit, right? So with that surrounding cast, could I see it being a success? Absolutely. Do I think one of the other guys might offer a little more appeal down the road? Perhaps. So that's really where you kind of weigh those things a little bit.
Fantastic. Last question for you. I'm just fascinated by the opt-out element of this season. Yeah. And, you know, I don't blame any player for in July, August, September questioning the safety elements or they have parents or grandparents or whatever. I get it. That's not my question. But how are teams evaluating guys that frankly have not played for a year? You know, and all of them kind of have different variables. Maybe Jamar Chase is the exception, whether it's off the field issue, their new position or whatever. Because that, to me, I feel like is the most fascinating element where I would assume that there are some guys that opted out that teams say, I don't care, I completely love them. And there are other teams that are like, I have way too many questions. So, you know, take that wherever you want. But I just find that to be a fascinating element of this draft.
Yeah, I think there are two facets here. One is the NFL teams wanting to know, just hear the player's explanation for opting out. In the case of Caleb Farley, the Virginia Tech corner, he lost his mother in 2018. And basically his message was, I didn't want to lose my dad. And I didn't know, you know, how much concern there would be. You know, if he got sick, what happens then? You lose both parents in the span of a year, year and a half. What team could ever question that thinking? Plus, he's a really good player. You know, it's come back to hurt him in the sense that he's having back surgery and everything. But still, that reasoning makes sense. Then there's the part of it where teams want to say, all right, do they have enough tape? And, you know, in the case of Rashawn Slater, three-year starter, you could get it. In the case of a Chase or a Penei Sewell, they're so highly regarded. You know, there may not be that major concern over what they could be one day. But, you know, then again, Sewell and Kyle Pitts and a few of these other guys are not even 21 years old yet. So, you know, that's a little worrisome. You know, guys are turning 21 next week into October. You know, this is a young crop for in some cases, especially among the opt-outs. So, you know, did a guy opt out his final two games? Probably not going to make that big a deal in the long run. But for the whole season, for Micah Parsons with the character questions and all that, it absolutely is a concern because it's less tape, less information, and less comfort, I would say.
Very good. Eric Edholm, Yahoo Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric Edholm. I think it goes without saying, if you listen to the last 20 plus minutes of this conversation, the man knows his football. Final, what do you do on Sunday morning? When you wake up Sunday morning, what is your world going to be like?
I'll say Monday morning because okay. Sunday I'm still finishing my grades, which are like, 32 teams and, 150 words a piece. You do the math. But yes, Monday morning, I will wake up. I'll have a nice breakfast. I will drop my kids at school. And I mean, I have stuff to write, but you know what? I might just sit around for a couple hours and stare off into the void for a little bit.
I was going to say that might be the day that I don't know where you live. You find a midday bottomless mimosa happy hour. I don't know if that makes me sound really lame or a millennial or a whatever, but usually a day or two after the NCAA tournament, that's just what I do is I find a bar that's serving stuff at 10 a.m. and I just put my phone down and chill out. But anyway, Eric Henholm, dude, I genuinely appreciate this, man. I know how busy you are making some time for me. I really appreciate it. Good luck. Enjoy that breakfast on Monday. Enjoy the draft on Thursday. I appreciate your time, man.
All right. Pleasure's mine, buddy. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, everybody. I am back. And I hope you enjoyed Eric Edholm. Eric is awesome. I've had him on my radio show a bunch, but he is just a guy that eats, sleeps, and breathes the draft. And what I love about him is he's not afraid to say something that is not kind of common. He's not afraid to say something that might be a little bit unpopular. He doesn't just go with the narratives because that's what the narratives are. He's an independent thinker. I really enjoy just talking football with him, and I do think as we get closer to college football season next year, we will have to have him back on to talk about some of the 2022 prospects, college football in general. But I really love Eric's work. I really think, he is as good of a voice on the NFL draft as there is, and I really enjoyed talking to him. Let's wrap up, because here's the thing, right? Coming into today's show, coming into the week, my plan was going to do the entire show on the NFL draft, and that was the plan up until Tuesday night when something just so absurd, so crazy, so like it made my skin crawl, and I don't want to be dramatic about it, but I had to talk about it, and that was at 9:06 p.m. The NCAA puts out a release, a statement about whatever. I don't even know what it was about. But at the bottom, on one little line at the end, there's a little comment. Oh, we've extended Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, for another 2 years through 2024, 2025. To which I say, NCAA, what are you doing? We were finally about to get rid of this guy. There was real buzz and real momentum behind the scenes that he might actually be on the way out. And now he's extended through 2024, 2025. And I'll just say, this is not good for college sports. Now, like, is this the end of college sports as we know it? Like, no, I don't believe that. But it is not good for college sports. And let's talk about Mark Emmert a little bit. Because you guys know, and I think one thing that you guys like about me, I don't just always play into the common, typical, obvious narratives, right? If I don't believe something to be true, even though everybody else says it's true, then I'll say it. Like, perfect example, I was talking about Roger Goodell right before Eric Edholm. I think Roger Goodell is probably a little bit better than people give him credit for. Like, has he messed up at times? Yeah. Should he have been a little harder on Ray Rice earlier? Of course. Was he probably too hard on Ezekiel Elliott based on the information that he had? Yeah, probably. But in general, like, I think Roger Goodell's a pretty good commissioner. Like, these teams are making money hand over fist. They just got a new TV deal that eclipsed the previous one. The NFL is rolling. It is by far the most popular thing on planet Earth, or at least here in the United States. And so, by the way, not planet Earth, because cricket, soccer, there's a lot of stuff more popular than the NFL. But in the United States, NFL is king. Roger Goodell is better at his job than he gives him credit for. So I don't always buy these narratives that are complete, everybody says one thing, so I have to go with it. But when it comes to Mark Emmert, everybody that says that he is incompetent, incapable, just a terrible leader in every way, shape, or form, they're absolutely 100% right. And I feel bad because I think that the NCAA in general, college athletics in general, gets a bad rap because of his incompetence. Sometimes it's the really, really, really small stuff, right? Like this year, NCAA tournament, we all saw the story. the women's locker rooms, the women's weight rooms. It's a couple dumbbells that, you know, that they picked up at the consignment shop, and these women have to use these to get ready for the NCAA tournament compared to with what the men were dealing with. You understand why there's frustration and why the NCAA looks bad doing it. But to me, it goes to the bigger issues. It goes to the important issues where you need actual leadership, and Mark Emmert cowers in the corner like the weak leader that he is. I don't mean to be overly dramatic, but it's the truth. I'll take you back. There's a lot of stuff going on in college sports right now, but let's go back about a year. Let's go back to last summer. Maybe not quite a year, but 6, 7, 8 months. Do you guys remember what it was like in June, July, August, September, when one league is canceling after the other, after the other? This league's canceling. This league is practicing. This league has players on campus. This league won't even allow their players to come back. Where was Mark Emmert? That was the moment in time where we needed leadership, where we needed somebody at the top that either said, hey, guys, it's safe to play college football, let's move forward. It's safe to play college soccer, let's move forward. It's safe to play volleyball, tennis, golf, whatever. Let's move forward. And Mark Emmert just hit in the corner. You heard nothing from him as the Big Ten and Pac-12 canceled, as the ACC, SEC, and Big 12 move forward. And at the end of the day, like, that was where you needed leadership. And so that was where he completely lost me, where I said, listen, this guy is as bad as everybody says, because these are some of the biggest decisions that you can make as an organization. And I do understand that there are certain things that you can do that if the SEC wants to play football, you can't stop them from playing football. But there needed to be leadership at the top. There needed to be somebody bringing these commissioners together, trying to get them on the same page. And instead, the exact opposite happened. Mark Emmert, you know, cowered in a corner. And I think that's a metaphor for his entire time as the leader of the NCAA. Think about all the things that are going on right now in sports and how little that he does and how little leadership that he shows in making the decisions that are shaping the sports that we love. Listen, I talk almost 99% college football, college basketball on this show. I obviously love college sports. I worry about the future of college sports, and I understand all of these things are not easy to come up with, and all of these problems that the NCAA is dealing with, there is not an easy solution to, but you're getting paid $2.7 million a year to come up with solutions, so I'm sorry that I do not feel bad for you. But just think about what's going on in college sports right now. First of all, just these past few weeks, you have the one-time transfer rule. And I'm just going to tell you guys straight up, I would guess if you truthfully polled coaches, like 99% of them hate it. And it is because of everything that I've said. You can't keep control of your players. You can't keep other people from tampering with your players. They have one bad game. They want to enter the portal. And it's like, there is no one that actually works in college sports that thinks this is a good rule. But Mark Emmert was afraid of public backlash and getting yelled at and Shea Patterson and his lawyers and all that stuff. And he changes the rules, even though nobody in college sports actually thinks this is what's best for college sports. I heard Bob Huggins do an interview about this right before the rule passed. He was on John Rothstein's podcast in maybe October, November, December. And he's like, dude, I'm tired of them asking me to be on these committees, and then they don't take to heart anything I say. So Mark Emmert gets all these people together, and then all of a sudden he doesn't listen to anything they say. How about name, image, likeness? You guys know where I stand on name, image, likeness. I think two things can be true. I think players should be able to make money off their name, image, and likeness, no different than what I do, right? Manscaped.com promo code Torres is me making money off my name, image, and likeness. So I believe college athletes should be able to have a YouTube channel, should be able to promote products on their Instagram, all that kind of stuff. But what's the plan, right? Like, this is a seismic, game-changing plan, and it's going to go into effect next year. Like, there are states that have legalization and have changed the law that will allow athletes to make money off name, image, and likeness. But none of these schools have any idea what that means. What's allowed? What's not? What's okay? Is it okay in all 50 states? Is it only okay in the states that have changed the law? I saw Arkansas this week change the law. Florida by 2020, August of 2020, will be able to allow name, image, likeness. New Mexico, I believe, is one as well. California, I think, in the next year. Well, where's the plan? We need you, Mark Emmert. You can't sit in your ivory tower and do nothing. We need answers. And this is how it's been his entire regime. I'll take it a step further. How about all those, remember when the FBI stuff happened and he put up this big stink about, oh, we are cracking down. We are not going to allow this kind of stuff to happen. Well, what's happened? Oklahoma State got a one-year postseason ban. They appealed it. We still have no idea if they're going to get punished or not. But Oklahoma State wasn't supposed to play in the NCAA tournament last year. I thought the punishment was too severe to begin with. But it doesn't change the fact that there was a punishment, and I think to avoid a PR disaster, he just kind of allowed Oklahoma State to play in the NCAA tournament. USC, I talked about a few weeks ago, basically got no punishment. And do we really believe that any of these schools are going to get punished? Or is Mark Emmert afraid of the public backlash of giving Louisville or Kansas or Auburn or whoever, Arizona, a two-year postseason ban? Because I think that he is. And so to me, again, all of this stuff is a metaphor for who he is and what is wrong with college sports right now. I think college sports is great. I think it provides tens of thousands of educational opportunities for kids across the country, and we focus so much on football and men's basketball, but there are wrestlers, tennis players, volleyball players, softball players, swimmers, divers. They all get advantage of the NCAA system. The same thing that a UCLA football player or a UCLA basketball player gets under their scholarship, a UCLA swimmer, assuming they have a swimming team, gets the same thing. Food, housing, meals, this, gear, travel. It's great. The college sports system is great, but there are flaws. There are things that need to be fixed. There are things that are coming that need to be addressed, that need somebody to talk publicly, and Mark Emmert is nowhere to be found. And so I thought, and I can tell you definitively that many people across college sports thought that with his contract coming up, there was a distinct possibility that by like the end of next college, basically college athletic calendar, so the end of the 2022 academic year, that there would be, you know, movement to bring change, and that there would be a new leader, and that maybe we would finally get somebody that is capable of leading in the way that we need him to lead. But unfortunately, that does not appear as though it is going to happen. And so because of it, I hate to say it, but like this just feels, you know, not very good right now in terms of the future of college sports. I hate to see it, but this is not good for college sports. This is not good for student athletes. And like I said, there's some really big decisions that are coming up that need some leadership, and he is simply not the man to provide it. All right. I think that's it for this episode of the Arator Sports Podcast. How about that? Really was thinking that it was going to be a short, easy, nice, plain, boring, quiet episode. Instead, it's the exact opposite. I went for an hour, talked a lot of NFL draft stuff. Eric Edholm wrapped on Mark Emmert. Before we get out of here, I want to remind you, please make sure that you are subscribed to the Aaron Torres Podcast, iTunes, the Podcast Addict app, Podbean, Spotify, TuneIn Radio. Wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure that you are subscribed to the Aaron Torres Podcast. Also, make sure to rate and review the show. Go ahead, give us a quick 5 stars. One of these days, I'll start reading reviews again because some of you guys have left some really awesome reviews. So make sure to rate and review. Also, make sure you're following on social media, @Aaron_Torres on Twitter, @AaronTorresPod on Instagram. Make sure to find the YouTube page. A lot of good stuff going up on the YouTube page. And that's it. AaronTorresPodcastQuestions@gmail.com if you have any questions. AaronTorresPodcastQuestions@gmail.com if you have any questions. But shout out to Torrent Craig. Shout out to Rachel Hates My Voice. Again, Thursday episode. I don't know if we're going to go back to 3 times a week every week, but we are going to do a short Thursday NFL draft recap episode on Thursday night into Friday. So you'll have something to listen to on the way into work on Friday. But that is all for today's Aaron Torres Sports Podcast. I will be back tomorrow, people.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.